Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, if you're a new parent, you're most likely to have been warned about the terrible twos. But you may feel a bit unprepared for this rite of passage if your child has been cooperative up until now. The stage doesn't always begin exactly on your child's second birthday. As a matter of fact, development experts say it can strike as early as 18 months or as late as 30 months. Even though some angelic children never seem to go through that phase. But how do you know if your child's in the midst of the terrible twos? And even more important, what are you to do about it? Well, joining me this morning to discuss this important developmental stage is Dr. Ann Botash, a professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University and a nationally recognized expert in child abuse. Welcome, Dr. Botash. Thanks for joining us. So why the name Terrible Twos? I mean, that alone would send a shudder of fear down an unsuspecting parent's back.
I think it's because it's around the age time that we start to see the children acting in ways that parents have a hard time dealing with, so terrible comes in there and sounds nice to put together, terrible twos. But as you said, it's really a range. It starts around 18 months for some kids. Some children, it's definitely around the age two, and some children never go through this kind of phase. It's not something that any parent really has any control over. I think it all depends on the child's temperament. And it has to do with development of autonomy. The child wants to do things on their own and be independent and, you know, try new things out. And those are all good things. Unfortunately, it comes across sometimes to the parent as, you know, this isn't really fun for them. They aren't able to do what they need to do or need to get done. You may be in the middle of a store going shopping, and all of a sudden your child has a temper tantrum because they can't get what they want. And I think that leads to a lot of stress in families at this age. So that's why it's called terrible twos. But honestly, it's just one of those phases that kids go through, and parents have to just be aware that it's going to happen. Everything changes. You go from being this quiet newborn, sometimes newborn crying at night, to sleeping, and then all of a sudden a change in behavior.
It's interesting because I remember reading somewhere way back that once a child begins to walk is one of the first steps of really separating from what, even in their own mind, cognitively, they view themselves almost as fused to that parent figure. And they begin to walk, and it goes along with the developmental phase of feeling somewhat an individual. Clearly, that's usually around 12 to 14 months kind of thing. But this is another level of that, it sounds like. It sounds like they're beginning to go that much further in terms of their ability to see themselves as a separate entity and maybe test those limits.
Right. Does that make sense? Kids are constantly exploring. They want to learn. And, you know, even as, you know, younger than around 9 months, they put things in their mouths to just, you know, taste it and see what it feels like. And, you know, we think it's kind of annoying they keep putting things in their mouths, but they're putting things in their mouths because they're exploring. And as they are able to walk around, they can really explore. And, you know, usually that's the time when parents, you were tired before because you didn't get sleep at night. Now you're tired because you're running around.
You need roller skates.
Toddler. Right. Yeah.
So tell us, what are some of the hallmark behaviors you started to allude to that you would see during this phase?
Well, of course, there are a lot of good behaviors. I mean, the children are learning to talk, they're able to walk, they're able to climb stairs, all these things that a toddler can do. But the phases, the parts of this phase that people get concerned about are poor appetite, which is normal in the 2-year-old.
Why does that happen? Yeah.
I think because they don't need as many calories for
what they
do. Oh, okay,
so there's not as much of a growth spurt at that moment.
Right, and you don't necessarily see the growth spurt. They're just They have a lot of activity, but they're not necessarily hungry. And they like to eat in a kind of a grazing pattern. They like to just have a little bit at a time. And that's not what we do in our society. We have 3 meals a day. And, you know, some people graze. But, you know, most people eat a regular meal. And so you put the child down to eat, and they've already, you know, had whatever bites to eat all morning. They're not going to eat a full meal.
Hence the parent gets frustrated.
And it can be very frustrating. You just went through, you know, putting together a special meal for them because they're a toddler and they have certain foods that they like or don't like. And it's hard. I think you have to think about, you know, giving choices when you have a child who's being a fussy eater at that time you know, in their life, if you can give them good, healthy choices, and hopefully they'll choose one of the good, healthy choices and not just say no, which is another part of this phase, the normal negativism, but also recognize that they're eating a little bit is okay. You don't have to force them to eat all of it, and just put it in the refrigerator, save it for later.
What are some of the other things you said no? Well, I mean, that clearly comes to mind as the hallmark phrase that comes out of a toddler's mouth.
Right, I mean,
mouth.
It's kind of when you realize as a parent, uh-oh, I taught them too well. They now know how to say no. And I think no, they're testing their limits with no as well. They want to see how far they can go by saying no. And they want, they're trying it. Basically. And
well, before that, they've been told no.
They've been told no.
Now
they've learned. They learned it worked. And now they want to see if they can use it. So it's part of the, you know, growing autonomy. And it's part of, I think, their learning language. It's also that they've learned no. And they get, you know, frustrated with you when they can't do something. And they want to try it out.
So there's lack of what the parent might view as cooperation or cooperation.
Yeah, and it's again, it's a normal phase, the negativism, that no to everything. And sometimes as a doctor, you know, I'll see patients and, you know, I have learned my lesson not to ask to do certain parts of the examination. You just have to do it because they'll say no to everything. Or if you ask questions, you know, about, you know, what they like or what they don't like, sometimes these children in this age group will be just saying no to everything. For whatever reason.
So clearly that's very frustrating as well. So we've just hit on two behaviors that are quite frustrating. Are there more?
Well, I think it's the whole grouping of behaviors of testing limits. It can be, you know.
You mentioned tantrums for one,
tantrums,
for example.
Which are your limits. They're testing your limits, but also testing their limits, you know, to see how far they can go with something you said no to. Maybe they want to go up or down the stairs, and you don't want them to yet because you don't feel comfortable with them doing that on their own. You know, they're fishing through, you know, the garbage pail. They're doing things that you don't want them to do because they might get dirty or they might make a mess or something like that. And those kinds of things, I think you have to, as a parent, pick your battles. You know, what's important to say no to and what's not. And most of the time, the more important things to say no to have to do with safety. You don't want the child, you know, running out in the street. So that's a big no. And that's, you know, definitely setting a limit there that they can't test. And other than that, most of the things that kids explore, you should be able to let them try.
How about the feeding issue? The fact that they may not want to sit down and eat.
I think for eating, you know, if you've got a healthy child who's growing otherwise and you don't have an issue medically with them, then you can let them, you know, choose healthy foods and not eat. And they learn quickly that if they didn't eat, another meal's not coming for another couple of hours, then that's all there is to it. They're they're going to learn tomorrow, I better eat.
Because they'll get hungry.
Yeah, they'll get hungry.
So do you think that it's important, you mentioned pick your battles, do you think it's important occasionally then to let your child win a battle that isn't a safety battle, for example?
I think as long as you don't let it get into a battle, you know, it's not that they're necessarily winning, because then you get into a limit thing where they learn that, oh, if I have a tantrum, I get what I want. So if a child has a tantrum, I think it's okay at this age to use a little bit, you know, use time out for a short period of time.
Well, let's talk about that, because tantrums is often something that people feel really undone by, especially if it's in a public place. What kind of advice do you give to parents if their two-year-old who's doing their normal, you know, developmental thing is creating a scene at Walmart? I mean, what do you do?
Usually I recommend to people to just get up and leave. I mean, unfortunately, it wrecks your whole day. You didn't get to buy what you needed at Walmart or wherever. So that's, you know, but that's the advice really for a child who's doing that. They don't get what they need. You don't get what you need either, but they don't get what they wanted. And the best thing is to react minimally, to not, you know, overreact. Don't have a tantrum yourself. They learn it's a feeling of, you know, positive reinforcement, even if it's a negative.
So in a sense,
even if you yell at the child for having a tantrum, they're getting attention.
And you're also modeling that behavior, right?
Yes.
In other words, if you raise your voice and you're screaming, you're really showing to the child, well, that's okay behavior because mom's doing
right.
it.
And, you know, sometimes you can't help yourself. You're frustrated. You're tired. But, you know, just try to keep in mind, I might be egging this on a little bit and let me take a little break. You know, maybe I need a break.
So
maybe
a time out for mom.
Right.
Because I think that when the experiences I've had talking to parents about things like the terrible twos, it seems like the tantrum seems to be a major issue, and feeling that the parent is in control. And I think that there's some beginning of the letting go. I think, first of all, I think most successful parenting is when a parent can, over time, let go as a child is able to do things autonomously. And this is part of that time. So the question is knowing when to allow the child to be successful in asserting themselves,
right,
and when not to.
And I think you can kind of do that if you can predict situations. So you know that your child's going to, you know, want ice cream when you walk by the ice cream store and have a tantrum. Well, don't walk by the ice cream store if you really don't want them to have ice cream. You know, those kinds of things, you can avoid some of those situations, not all of them. Or maybe you've had this situation before, you've already had the tantrum, so now next time you can, you know, set the limits before you even go out. We're going to walk by the ice cream store, not going to get ice cream, but when we come home, we're going to do something else, or we're going to have ice cream then, or whatever.
So it's kind of a negotiate. It's also the opportunity, it seems to me, to start introducing this notion of negotiating with a child.
Yes. And, you know, it's hard, I think, for parents because they just went from basically being in charge and being in control of what happens to now having to have a little thought, you know, that goes into it and planning. And it takes a lot of energy.
Yeah. But it's kind of like what I was alluding to before, which is that, to me, ultimately successful parenting is having a child who develops into an independent adult. And that takes place in very many steps all along the way. And it seems like that's the beginning process at two.
Yes. And you want them to do it. You want them to take, you know, control. You want them to be independent. So if you think that way as a parent, you might see this in a more positive light instead of, you know, feeling bad about it or, you know, expecting them to behave or whatever. This is now your chance to, you know, be happy that they're growing up and doing what eventually will become, you know, important for them. They can make these decisions on their own because you've helped them. You've guided them through this part.
Guided them maybe patiently and with kindness and respect for them. I mean, I think that's something that often goes, maybe some people feel that's inappropriate, but I feel very strongly that children need to be respected and get that feeling even when they're very young in terms of their needs. And clearly in a negotiation, but done in a way that's respectful.
I agree. I think that's, you know, something that kind of goes without saying, but as a parent, you forget because you're in the moment and it's hard to remember that these are little people that you have to respect their feelings.
In the very little time we have left, have you seen during that period more tendency towards abuse?
It is one of the, you know, part of the seven deadly sins that Dr. Barton Schmidt talks about. Years ago, he published an article with the seven deadly sins, and three of them are, you know, normal negativism, separation, or surviving the whole testing your limits period, and then poor appetite. And, you know, each one of those can make parents become very frustrated. And again, I think if parents think about it as this is a normal growth, this is a normal part of their behavior, we want them to have these behaviors so that they can grow up and make decisions on their own, I think it's much easier to deal with. And also to take the time for yourself to just step back and, you know, rest a little bit, give yourself a time out.
Very good advice, Dr. Ann Botesh, Professor of Pediatrics at Upstate Medical University. Thanks so much for sharing your wisdom with us today. Always a pleasure. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back. So please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.